Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and Mr. Money Mustache is with me again. How are you?
I'm same as our last show, supreme, and thanks for asking.
Very good. Today, we're doing a little bit of a different format, shorter episode. We're going to try to make it actionable, which is a great departure. Usually, I try to just tell useless stories, but today, we're going to hit a couple topics, and I was inspired by listening to a few podcasts and just conversations I've had in person with some folks, and we're going to talk about kind of one more year syndrome and what if people are scared to retire, even though they're in a position to probably be able to retire. We're going to talk a little bit about like being bored. And there's one thing that I've heard people say, Carl's a good friend of ours. So I'll pin it on him because I think he did say something to this effect where people coming up to retirement, they express a thought about, hey, I think I might be bored and I'm afraid of being bored. And some people say, if you're bored, then you're a boring person. And I think that's, it's overly harsh and it's antagonistic and it's not a good starting point for a conversation. So it depends on like who it is you're talking to. If you're like, hey, I don't want to talk to this fucker, then maybe you say that, but like, we're not that. And we're going to come at it from a different direction.
Yeah. Maybe a better way to say that is boredom is a choice.
Yeah. You have the option on what you spend your time on. And I think, again, hobbies are an important thing, but there's a couple pieces we'll unpack. So number one, people are sometimes scared to retire and it manifests in one more year syndrome, which is an endless cycle of, you know what, next year. And then they're like, it'd be good to have a little bit more money. Maybe the markets are going to be down, maybe some other possibility. And Pete, you've done some one-on-one coaching with folks. And I think you probably see this, a little bit of fear to actually retire. What insight do you have to help people move past that?
You have to learn to trust the numbers. A lot of people understand the numbers in principle, but they don't feel it in their gut. That might be just the case that you're never going to feel it in your gut. But in other words, waiting longer is not going to help. So you have to just take the numbers and then just make the leap at some point. And then very quickly people realize, oh yeah, I should have done this a long time ago because the numbers do work out. They're not magic. They're not dependent on faith. And then you're focused on living the rest of your life. And sure enough, your savings will continue to grow and you're fine.
Are there any cases that people were right? They should have waited.
I mean, I'm sure it's happened. If somebody retires earlier than, more aggressively than the 4% rule, for example, that's one way that, and then you happen to have bad luck from a stock market decline and you insist on continuing to spend as much as if the stocks hadn't declined, your investments, then you'll see that your balance is decreasing and it'll still take, the funny part is it'll still take like a minimum of 15 years, more like 20 years until you actually run out of money. But most people just see that declining balance and they start to worry much earlier. And the ironic part of that is that even in the worst case, like terrible declines in the stock market, 10 years of high spending, they're still way better off than the average person in their demographic who basically has no savings.
Right.
So it's quite funny how overly cautious we can get in just creating worry where only there should be nothing but a feeling of ridiculous safety and abundance.
This hit in our household. Elizabeth and I debated often because I thought we were in a spot where we should both be able to stop working. And she wanted to work a little bit longer and her job wasn't bad enough for her to quit, which is a weird little curse to not have a job that's horrible enough for where you're like, you know what, I'm out of here.
Yeah, it's like licorice handcuffs. You're like, I don't mind licorice, but it's not good, but I'll just keep it anyway. Yeah.
Yep. And I think I realized at some point, like it wasn't about the math and it was about something else. And in the long run, she's thrilled. I will have an upcoming episode where I interview her. She's coming up on 2-year anniversary of being retired. She fucking loves it. It's more amazing than she thought or that I thought. I was nervous that she may want to go back to work and feel like a lack of productivity. She hasn't felt that. She's, you know, as busy as ever. and has a lot of downtime. She has slow mornings, like all the things that are making her happy. She gets a piece of that every day. Sure, there's down days, but like overall, it exceeded everyone's expectations.
Gets to help at the library, I recall, as well,
yeah.
Which is like a lot of book people's dream is to yeah. like hang out with library people and be useful.
It's totally, yeah, great use of time. So she gets to volunteer, she does social things, and yeah, it's mm-hmm. fantastic.
I believe comes close to the puzzle championship.
yeah.
Recent year. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a big puzzler. She's not award-winning, but she's placed in some of these puzzle competitions.
Puzzle contender.
Yeah. Pretty fun. Okay. So another issue, and this comes into the boredom and maybe retiring to something and hobbies, but sometimes people are a little scared to retire, but it's about what they're going to do with their time. So they continually do research and they're trying to find examples of people that are maybe happy with retirement. But some people, they are looking for examples that disprove happiness in retirement. So people mm-hmm. that went back to work, it didn't work out for some reason. What insight do you have on people that are scared about the use of their time / boredom?
Well, first of all, I wanted to mention that we made fun of a podcast clip on a few shows ago where Morgan Housel and whoever the host was were saying, like, I don't know anybody who hasn't gone back to work after trying early retirement. I'm like,
right.
What? We're the opposite. Like,
yeah.
We don't know anybody. Well, actually, I do know some who have gone back to work, but very few. Like, if I know 100 early retirees, then like 95 of them are still happily retired.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't have much insight beyond that other than the fact that what you've explained with your wife is that most people have the opposite realization, like, wow, there's so much to do. And I just didn't have time for it before. And my life has easily expanded to fill this time. And I'm just having more fun, infinite weekend.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
A little bit, yeah. And I think we could dig in a little bit more. And I'll just ask you, right? So you're going to be moving to a new neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Check out the sound check at the end here, but you're going to be moving. You will need to make new friends, or it sounded like maybe you already have new friends there.
Yeah, it's already been happening, but I'll be expanding. Yeah, I'll have to expand my Denver area friend circle.
How do you make friends as a, I think if I said middle age, we're older than middle age now, but we'll say in the middle age.
I'm 102 at least.
Yeah.
So I'm exactly middle aged.
Yeah. So how do you make friends as a middle aged dude?
I think it's the same as always. It's just you make eye contact and speak to people, make some jokes, right? So in my neighborhoods, I've always liked to become friends with all my neighbors, anyone who lives in the sort of eye side of the house. So if I see them outside, I'll just say, hi, you must be my new neighbor or whatever, or make some kind of comment on whatever's happening at the moment. And then you introduce yourself, and then quickly you're sharing stories and background with this friend. And then I typically like to leave it with an offer, like, hey, well, I'm a carpenter, and if you ever need any tools or advice on house stuff, I just love to help out neighbors. And I'll write my number down for you, and you give them your number, or even try to get both. The best thing you could do is exchange numbers. Mm-hmm. For real, like, and quickly write it down, because if they give you your name, at least in my case, I'm going to forget it.
Right.
So write down their name, say farewell, then run inside, stick it on your fridge, and be like, orange house next door, Cindy and Dan, and like so-and-so. And then eventually you build that up, and then it quickly leads to more. I mean, in my new neighborhood, I've been working out at the gym already there, because I've been spending a lot of time in that neighborhood. And another guy's like, Pete, You might not remember me, but we were on a trip together long ago in one of the Ecuador Chautauqua series.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out there's this really nice guy and his wife who live about 5 doors down, for maybe 10 houses away from where my new house is. So it's super cool. And then I was like, this is like about a month ago this happened. And like, I'm considering buying a house in the neighborhood. So yesterday when I found out I got the house, I went there and I'm biking around to see what's around, like learn the details even more, and like, how far is it to the light rail station and stuff. And then he's like, Pete, it's me again. And then I stopped and he gave me a tour of his house, and we learned all this stuff about each other. And like, we're all set up. He told me they have a rotating happy hour thing, and they have this alley party that happens quarterly where everyone in the neighborhood is super social.
Cool.
Bunch of them have kids. Everyone's kind of like these your typical Colorado people, where they're all like active and self-actualized, fun, right. Like, what a great neighborhood, what a great state. Yeah. Like, that's kind of my type of person, just happy, cheerful, do stuff people.
Yeah.
So I'm already so excited about moving there, and it's going to be like a friend bonanza, I think.
Yeah, very exciting. And so this might be tough for you and I to give advice, but we'll try. We'll see where this question goes. There's a lot of introverted people. As I navigate some of the conferences and other stuff, people do come out, but they're like, I'm introverted. And it actually stresses them out a little bit. You seem like an outgoing guy. You're walking around confident. You're like, hey, I'm Pete, moving in. I'm a carpenter, badass, you know,
carry an electric guitar when I'm walking around just for emphasis.
So it might be easier for you to make new friends. So do you have any insight, or have you observed other people? And you know what? You might be introverted, but you do what you need to do because you do enjoy it to be social.
Yeah, it's a skill. So according to the books and the personality types, I'm still introverted in the sense that I love my alone time. I like things quiet. My recharge time is at home. You know, like I'll go out to a party, and then I'll come home to chill. And the true extroverts will go out to the party, and then they'll go out to the nightclub and stay out till 3 a.m. or whatever. And like, we got to meet more people. And a good example of extroverts in modern, you know, in mature society is the Donegans. Alan and Katie Donegan, especially Alan. But they're just like, they're always up for another thing, more people. They never get tired. Much, much more people endurance than I'm sort of in between introvert and extrovert. But this is actually very practical for our listeners here, is if you're too shy and not good enough at meeting people, you can learn this skill of just becoming better. And you can like either watch people or read a book on it or watch some videos and just learn about what it means to be friendly. Because it's a skill, like you like making eye contact, using an expressive voice instead of like a super flat voice, making some gestures, joking around. And that's what other humans are attracted to, and they'll want to be your friends if you're more like that. You know, if you're afraid to say hi as you're going to get to your mailbox, people are going to be like, oh, there's that new guy. He's not very friendly. It's up to you to make the eye contact, say hi, ask some questions, even build up a little like roster of just pre-memorized questions, like things that you ask people about their lives, like how long have you lived here, or what brought you to this neighborhood, or do you guys have kids, or whatever. Just to crack the ice, that gets people talking, and then very quickly it leads to friends. Because guess what? Humans like having friends, and everybody wants to meet you and be your friend. It's just a matter of letting them know that they're welcome to do that.
I'll give three little tips here. Number one, give someone a compliment. So at the gym, you got to check in. There's some folks that are there all the time. You see them, but people were wearing a seasonal thing. So it was like Thanksgiving. So they had like turkey stuff, Christmas. They had like sweaters with lights and other things. And people were going through not talking to them. I'm like, oh, that's a great sweater or whatever. And then they tell me all about it and they remember me. And I make small talk like that all the time. Small things. I'm not having a long conversation. I'm just like, that's cool. And they remember you over time.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, the compliment. I haven't even learned that skill. So
I like your shirt, by the way. Is that a new shirt?
Thanks, man. No, it's a classic. It's actually a thrift store find.
Nice.
It's from like a farmer supply store.
Yeah, it's like a Western shirt. It has like the snap buttons.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Yeah, it's cool.
Easy on, easy off.
Second tip is if you're very introverted and you do have a little trouble with like making the small talk, be a hub that organizes stuff.
Yeah.
And this is a huge thing. I did this all the time until I had, I guess, more of a conversational comfort sort of thing going on. But if you're like, hey, I want to organize something at the Phi Collective or whatever your thing is, but like organize your own thing. You could bring people together. So for example, I think when I first joined the co-working space, I was like, I'm going to do a talk on SEO. Is that okay, Pete? Pete, why don't you come? Carl, why don't you come? And then that was sort of like social proof that like people were going to show up. And then there were whatever, like 20 people. And I kind of cut my teeth and met a ton of people just from that one thing. Yeah. And I was just presenting I mean, if you're introverted, you may not want to present, but I was comfortable just going through my shit that I knew well. And it helped a lot of people. And that kind of like set off a bunch of friendships that all started just from doing that one little thing.
Yeah, that's true. Hosting or giving are great, great ways to do stuff. Actually, I remember a similar story. I got invited to a conference. It was sort of an invite only, random, super random people from all fields go to the conference. And then you're supposed to either like attend talks or give talks if you're feeling bold. And the talks all get like created live. So it's not pre-scheduled. There's no pre-made speakers. There's just a whiteboard. So I was feeling saucy. So I put up like how to retire, put up some kind of thing about retiring at 30. And then it turned out the people at this conference, though, it was in California, and a lot of them were kind of famous, like authors or business magnates and stuff. I didn't even know them, but I just later kind of found out. I'm like, oh, wow, like in retrospect. But it turned out to be a great idea. So I gave this talk. I thought no one would be coming, but the whole room filled up. And then I'm like, cool. And I just did my best at making up a talk. And then because of that, everybody knew me who otherwise wouldn't have. And I'm still in touch with a bunch of the people I met just because of that one action of putting a whiteboard marker on a whiteboard in the 2015. So that kind of stuff is just, yeah, just give your knowledge is a great example.
All right. And last one, I heard this on a podcast, so I didn't fact check it or anything, but basically everyone wants conversations to be shorter. So if you have an interaction, typically on average, based on the survey on a podcast that I did not verify, it was like conversations should be 65% shorter. So you don't have to talk for a long time. Ask a couple questions, get the fuck out of there. Keep it short, leave them wanting more.
That's true. And it helps to learn about body language if you're not sure, because people are going to start fidgeting and looking away if you're talking too long. And the people who talk forever and you can't get away from them, they don't notice those body language things.
Yeah. And then people start avoiding you. So keep it short, be funny, get out. Like leave on a laugh.
Yeah.
You know? Like I think that's Costanza did that in a Seinfeld episode.
Oh, wow.
Deep cut. Okay.
It makes sense.
As we're wrapping up here, so I want to talk about the boring thing. So boring people are bored. I think that's a little overly harsh. If people have focused on their career for many years, maybe they didn't get to exercise the skill of not being bored. You mentioned being bored might be a choice. Can you expand and give some tips?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm rarely bored, but when I am, it's just because I've chosen not to engage in basically the infinite list of interesting activities that I have already laid out for myself. Like I have a lot of projects on the go, and I love when I work on them. So it's a matter of sometimes you just have to get up and start forcing yourself to do something. Mm-hmm. And then soon you won't be bored anymore because you're actually doing something. Inactivity kind of leads to boredom. But of course, if you retire from a busy job and you have zero, like your apartment is just empty fridge, you've been a 60-hour a week lawyer for your whole life and you've never done anything besides lawyering, then yes, if you just stop doing that and then sit in that apartment, it's going to be hard to create a new life. So it'll take some work. But I'm hoping that many of our listeners are not in that situation and they already have friends and hobbies, possibly children, at least pets. And so there's a lot of stuff to do already that you can just start doing better.
Yep. And one thing that I'll mention, and we don't have to go too far into it, but a lot of people do have an idea that they want to explore a new hobby. Maybe it's language learning. That's a great one. Keep your mind active. Music is another one that expands your mind. Maybe it could be social. And if you haven't done anything in specific areas, there's a strong chance you will be bad at it. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. It's like part of the struggle. I think it could be key to make sure it's something that you do because you enjoy it, even when you're not that good at it. So guitar is that for me. When you're learning music, it can be very slow. You're just doing the same measure again and again and again until you kind of get it under your finger. And it can be difficult. Language learning, very hard if you haven't learned other languages. So just keep that in mind. Like, it could be difficult, but you want to probably find hobbies that you can do even when they are very difficult. And I'm sure, you know, when you first started construction and carpentry and you were probably like, whatever, 10 years old or younger or something like that, right? You weren't great then, but you have decades now. So you're pretty darn good at it. But if you learn something brand new, then it would probably be a little harder, especially if it was disconnected, not an adjacent kind of hobby.
Yeah.
But
and like for me, a good example is playing instruments, you know, like playing the bass. I was starting from scratch. And it is frustrating because like I hear funky bass lines are all over in my head, but they just won't come out in the fingers.
Yeah.
But I'm aware of that. Like it does suck, but you're forcing yourself and it gets better. And it's fun to feel every time you do get better. And also if you understand how learning works, like your body, your brain is trying to fight learning. It's like, no, save space, save our energy for stuff that we're already good at.
Yep.
But like when you're forcing yourself in that unpleasant state, that's actually what learning feels like. So you're doing the rewiring even when it feels shitty. And if you learn that, then you'll actually savor the suck a little bit more because you're like, this is what learning feels like. This is what learning feels like.
Yep.
And then when you wake up the next day and you try that exact same thing again, you're like, wow, I think I learned something during all that sucky practice.
Totally. Yeah. It's very amazing. And that is the deliberate practice where you're on the edge of comfort, where you're just outside of what you can actually do, just like building muscle or whatever. It's like a little bit more than what you can handle, but not too much more, just a little bit.
Right.
And it hurts in both cases.
And there's some forms of learning that just are pleasant as well. Like if you're playing, when we're playing music together, then we're still learning presumably, but it's also fun. Especially if we're playing a song that we've somewhat got down. With carpentry, I'm still learning every time I do it, but it's also fun the whole time. It's probably because I've reached, like I'm over the hump long ago of the sucky period. So more it's just like continuing to enhance as I do more and more stuff. So that's a reward for getting through the hard initial period though.
Very cool. All right. I think that's it for today for the quick hitting episode. I will give a shout out to the Phi Collective. We haven't talked about that in a couple weeks, but that is what the Mr. Money Mustache HQ co-working space has transitioned into. There's a virtual membership. Is there anything that you want to mention about it?
Just that it's awesome now. So the reason it became awesome is that a bunch of the members, these like fun extroverted people were just waiting. And I didn't realize everyone was willing to help out so much with me and Carl and Mindy and what we're doing. So now we have this whole committee we have events like almost every day. Our membership has doubled in just the last 3 months. So we have like 80 something members now. So it's getting more fun all the time. And it's got this whole like positive snowball feeling to it. So it's exciting. And then also we added this new idea of the remote membership, which is like $100 for the whole year. And you can still be part of the community online and you can even visit in real life if you're in Longmont. I think that's kind of a neat idea because there's people scattered all over the world and then the remote members can still be on the Discord server and chit chat with each other and make plans like, hey, maybe we should all go to Colorado in June or something. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really fun revival of that place and I'm so happy that happened.
Very cool. Yeah. And I'll give a plug, a good use case. So if you're going to travel through Colorado in the past, you would have to try to get in touch with me and I'm not a tour guide type. So I'm like, check with Carl. I don't know. Maybe someone could show you around or something, but typically Carl's busy. He's also not a tour guide. But if you have the virtual membership, then you're plugged into the Discord. You could say, hey, I'm going to be in town. You could drop by. A lot of people come by for Camp Phi, which is in July, and there's dozens of people. And we saw that last year. So if you're going to be making a trip through Colorado, this is a way to give you contacts. And I would say, I would be shocked if you were like, I'm coming by, I would like to get coffee. I'd be shocked if there weren't three or four people at least that would go meet up with you to go hang out and show you around Longmont or whatever.
Especially if you're coordinating with other remote members, because then everybody's having fun discovering the new place.
Yeah, very cool. All right, thanks, Pete. And we'll see you probably in a couple weeks.
Sounds awesome to me, and I'll probably have my new house by then. So more stories.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. You have a new house on the way here, or new to you, so it's not a brand new home, and you have some projects. What kind of stuff are you thinking about?
Well, the house that I'm purchasing at the end of this month, February, is a 2008 house. So it's kind of like, it's kind of a high-quality suburban style house at the time, and then it hasn't been really changed much since then. So you can imagine, it's got like some old carpets, some dated colors, a weird master suite that's like the size of a tennis court, but, you know, with really ugly shelving in the closets and other things like that. So I'm going to do cosmetic fix-ups, but also a few floor plan changes because I'm passionate about design and making stuff work well.
Okay.
The kitchen bigger by having it eat up some wasted space that's just outside the kitchen and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's a ton of stuff, but like you're super pumped and you're thinking about like design and the specifics. Do you have like an idea what you're going to tackle first?
Yeah, the first thing for me is always the garage. So I move into the house and then I insulate and drywall the garage and put like beautiful lighting and built-in shelves, built-in benches. In this case, I'm going to add some windows and a glass door because it has a nice big south-facing wall that's currently just all blank blackness. So, and that's because that's the base of operations. It's like a military. You go in there and you make your forward base.
Sure.
Where you can have your tools and, you know, materials and storage and everything. And then at that point, then I'm empowered to start building around my way through the rest of the house with like all this high quality workspace.
Very cool. And then any big upgrades from your current house to the new one, including a big project that you might do. So I don't know, is it going to be like a super epic kitchen or like bathroom or something like that? A lot of bidets all around.
Well, my current house is already pretty nice because I've lived there like 8 years and I've redone everything at this point. So it's all even new windows that are all way bigger than before. And so it's going to be like the bringing the new house up to the standard of my current house is already going to be a big thing. But the biggest thing is just the size. Like this new one has double the interior square footage and also a slightly bigger garage, which means I can bring back a lot of the stuff that is currently not in my house. Like right now, the garage has to double duty between, or triple duty between workshop and gym and then car storage if I want to bring the car in for any kind of snowstorm or something. Mm-hmm. Whereas now it's just going to be dedicated. I have room for a gym, I have room for a workshop in the garage, and still room for the car and that kind of stuff.
Beautiful.
So going to be really nice to That's spread so out and express my creativity. Less time spent losing stuff and tripping over objects.
Yeah.
Because like one of the biggest downfalls of my life is it's just like physical chaos. I have too many hobbies for the limited amount of space in my smaller house. So it's going to come back and expand just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. All intentional. And that makes, I mean, it's cool when everything has its spot. And then when you need it, you know where to get it versus I have a little chaos down here. I think I've described it before. It's like I kind of know where everything's at, but I let it get a little too far most of the time. And then when I don't want to do some piece of work, let's say taxes are coming up, then I'm like, I need to clean my desk. And then I'll spend like an hour not doing what I'm supposed to do and then clean the desk.
That definitely happens to all of us. But at least you're producing something and it's still fun.
Yeah.
You're still moving your body around, and moving objects around.